With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Want to get a chiseled look in the jawline? Sculpt and shape your jawline with added volume from Juvederm Volux XC. Juvederm Volux XC is an injectable gel specifically designed to be robust enough to improve moderate to severe loss of jawline definition. And it is the first and only hyaluronic acid filler approved for the jawline. Add volume to your jawline for a chiseled look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com.
Our kids are our kids, even if they weren't genetically related to either of us. It makes no difference. I don't see them in any way any less my children because they don't have my genes. We know it's wrong that our family isn't considered as valid as any other family, and we've just always known that we would continue fighting until all families are treated the same. And I know that that will happen one day. It's just been a very long road, and I'm sure we still have a lot left to fight for.
Hello, hello. Welcome to all of you lovely, wonderful, fabulous listeners. I am Lottie Jeffs.
And I am Stu Oakley. And you are listening to Some Families. Now, we just want to take this opportunity at the top of this episode to say a huge thank you to all of our listeners who I don't think we give enough credit to for being just the most wonderful supporters of this podcast. We are now regularly in the top of the parenting charts on Apple, and that is down to you all listening and sharing and leaving your comments and leaving reviews. And if you haven't, then please do, because it really helps our little queer voices in this family parenting space get noticed. So thank you so much.
It really helps Stu and I's thirst for self-validation and
that
love.
As well.
So please do us a favour and leave us a comment, a good one. Stu, how are you? What's been going on?
I've been good. The sun is out. I feel we are crawling into summer now, and I feel very, very happy about that. I have a funny story, actually, that I wanted mostly to share with the listener, because you actually know this story, Lottie. I was on set last week. I'm working on a film production at the moment, and I've been talking about my family, and this person on set just turned to me and said, "Oh, is the kids with your wife today?" And I was just floored. I just looked at them and I was like, "Me? Like the queerest, campest, most effeminate person out there." And bless her, she just kind of was like, well, just because you talked about having kids. And so we all kind of like assumed, and I just thought, how interesting, like, still the fact that I had children had completely overridden any kind of queerness about me, because they'd naturally assumed that I was a straight parent.
It's so interesting. And it must happen to me all the time as well, without me realizing it. Like, I must be just misidentified, I guess.
Yeah. And I wonder how many times that has actually happened in the past, where actually people go, or even in that situation, maybe they were all kind of thinking, like, you know, maybe he's some closeted person in hiding his sexuality from his poor wife, who has no idea that he's this big flaming queen.
Oh my God.
And how are you? How are you lot?
I'm good, thank you. The thing I wanted to just have a quick gossip about, and I know you're not watching it, so this is more of a gossip for our listeners who are potentially watching the show Call My Agent on Netflix. because there's a fabulous lesbian in it who I sort of model my style on, called Andrea. And she is like the most cutthroat agent, celebrity agent in this show. It's French, they're in Paris, it's all like fabulous. But in the penultimate season, spoiler alert, she gets pregnant via a one-night stand. She has this baby and then her girlfriend wants to raise the child with them, so they raise it together as two parents, as two mums. It's really beautifully told and sensitive and really some lovely scenes. But then in the last series, these two women just turn into like the worst mothers ever, to the point that in one scene, Andrea just can't deal with having the baby and gets chucked out of daycare and then goes and just leaves the baby in daycare, even though she's been chucked out, and like runs away and leaves the baby there on its own. I was just like flabbergasted because, one, there's not enough representations of like queer parents on TV. And then two, when they are, and I was like really rooting for this family, they just behave terribly. And I was just so disappointed that the sort of relationship and the family relationship was treated by the scriptwriters so flippantly.
It's like when we talked about Mitch and Cam before in Modern Family, I defy anyone to disagree with the fact that they actually become just awful parents to Lily by the end of the seasons, because they're just like, they just like, she just annoys them, and she's just this thing that's grown up. It's like they loved her when she was this little baby, and then all of a sudden, because she's growing into this woman.
And I think if there were more representations of queer families on TV, we wouldn't notice it so much. But because there's so few, it would just be great to see a functioning, loving, good parenting family. So if you, listener, have any recommendations that you could share with Stu and I for examples of good quality, or even, look, let's face it, any kind of queer parenting on television or in film or audio or books or anything, please let us know, because we're desperate to see ourselves reflected back, hopefully in a positive light. And talking of positive parenting stories,
so yes, this episode we are talking, and we are joined now by Renee von Medding, who is fighting the good queer parenting fight out in Ireland.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Hi, Renee. So you and your partner are parents to two little gorgeous girls, am I correct?
You are. Well, they're gorgeous most of the time. We have a 4 and a 2-year-old. Ava is 4 and Aria, who is the boss in our house, is 2.
Yeah, I've got a 2 going on 3-year-old, so I don't doubt it. Totally the boss.
So let's go back to the beginning of your parenting journey with you and, is it your wife, your partner?
My wife, Audrey. Yeah, so I guess we have been together for 13 years. And when we started dating, I think we pretty much immediately knew we would have kids. We didn't necessarily think we would ever get married, because at the time, you know, we didn't have equal marriage. But we always knew we would have kids in one way or another. And I think we kind of knew that we would go down the route of doing some form of fertility treatment. We were kind of at that point of feeling like we were ready to start doing that. We were kind of chatting, and we hadn't contacted any fertility clinics or anything. And I think we were probably a bit drunk one night, and, you know, we were like, wouldn't it be cool if, you know, one of us could carry a baby and we could use the other one's eggs, because that way, you know, we'd both be really physically, you know, connected to the process of, you know, creating a child. And we were kind of laughing about it, but then we Googled it, as you do, and sure enough, you can do that. And we found out it was called reciprocal IVF, and we were so excited. So in 2015, we booked an appointment with an Irish fertility clinic. We were told that they couldn't do it for us because at the time, Ireland didn't have, none of the clinics had a license to perform reciprocal IVF. So they said we could either do a standard IVF or IUI with my own eggs, because we knew that I would be the one who would be carrying. So we either had the option to do that, or the consultant said to us, look, if you really want to do this, I would suggest going abroad, because I don't see that this is going to be made available
within the time frame that you want to become parents. So we went away that day and we were pretty disappointed just knowing that we wouldn't be able to access, you know, the treatment we wanted in our own country.
And that was purely down to the fact that you were same-sex parents, am I right? Is that...
Yes and no. I mean, the issue with reciprocal IVF, well, number one, any children born as a result of that treatment would only have a legal connection to one of the parents. But aside from that, the clinics simply didn't have a license to do it.
What I'm trying to understand is if it was a, say it was a heterosexual couple, and say it was the lady, say the female had fertility issues and wasn't able to use her own egg, so had an egg donor, would they be able to do that? Would they have the license to do that?
Because you're absolutely correct in saying that yes, that was completely fine to do. You know, you could do egg donation or sperm donation. You could do both. Okay. As a heterosexual couple. So I suppose, yes, in a way, it was the fact that we were a same-sex couple. And, you know, from my point of view, it seemed a bit bizarre to me that if Audrey had been a man, we could go in and use, you know, an egg donor and use her sperm. You know, it seemed the same to me, you know, using your partner's genetic material along with donor material. You know, and that would have been fine.
Must have been so frustrating to have heard that news. It must have been so frustrating. Did you kind of bounce back quite quickly? And what were your next steps? Where did you go?
Yeah, so I mean, we're definitely the type of couple, and I for sure am the type of person who, when I'm met with resistance of any kind, I, you know, will just find another way. So I think, you know, that night we were researching other clinics in other countries and we quickly kind of landed on Spain as the place to go. Spain was the first country to start offering reciprocal IVF. So they had been doing it for a long time. And we found a clinic in Barcelona that had been doing reciprocal IVF for years and years. So we booked a call and very quickly kind of just said, okay, we're going to do this, we're going to go there. We didn't tell anyone, so no one knew we were going for IVF treatment. Everyone thought we were just going to spend a month in Barcelona. So we went and we had a holiday and we tried to make a baby, you know, as you do.
And what was that experience like being in Barcelona as well, in terms of noticing the difference to potentially like the attitude and how you were treated as a same-sex couple wanting to start a family?
The biggest challenge for us was the language barrier, because the clinic we went to, our consultant spoke quite good English. We didn't have any Spanish. Some of the people who would be drawing bloods or, you know, doing scans had no English and we had no Spanish. So there was a lot of communication with gestures and, you know, which is not ideal when you're going through something like fertility treatment. So we had just no idea what we were doing. We didn't know any other people who had gone through the same thing. So we were just completely shooting in the dark. And I think that was the most challenging aspect of doing all of that, aside from then obviously having to travel and be away from home. And just hoping that it would all work.
And can I just jump back quickly and ask, you said that you knew that you'd always carry. Could you talk to us about that conversation and how you decided that and some of the reasons behind that?
So I suppose with us, it was always an unspoken thing before we got to the point of actually deciding and having that conversation. It was just an unspoken thing. I have always been the type of person who just always saw myself as pregnant. I just always wanted to have that experience. Audrey, on the other hand, had zero desire whatsoever to be pregnant. The dynamics within our relationship, it just works well as well. I have quite a high pain threshold. I'm also a type 1 diabetic. So I'm used to like a lot of medical things. Whereas I think with Audrey, she wouldn't be quite as used to all of that, you know.
Isn't so that it just great, just being able to make like such a like fantastically practical decision? I love that.
Yeah, and I suppose then there is the other side of it as well. Just very practically looking at who could take time off from work, whose job brought in more money, and it made more sense for Audrey to stay in full-time employment and for me to take time off, and whether it was for, you know, during pregnancy or after the kids got here, it just made more sense from so many different angles, you know. And then after we had done it once that way and we'd had our first daughter, a lot of people said, oh, would you not switch around? And we just didn't, we'd never felt the need to, you know. And then a lot of people would also ask the question, well, do you not want to have a child that has your genes? And honestly, no. Like, I, you know, our kids are our kids. Even if they weren't genetically related to either of us, it makes no difference. I don't see them in any way any less my children because they don't have my genes, you know.
But isn't that the beauty as well of reciprocal IVF, in the sense that they grew in you as well? It is the best of both worlds also. So you both have that bond, and you both have different bonds, and that's what family's about. It's about all the different types of relationships that people have with their parents.
Yeah, we're so set on doing it that way, and I'm so happy that we were able to, even though it was a bit more difficult for us. I always say to people when they're trying to decide what's the right way for them to start their family, I don't think there is a right way. You just have to kind of look at all your options and figure out what's the right choice for you. Like, there's no one way of being a family.
And it's interesting, like, talking to some of my lesbian friends and my own wife about reciprocal IVF and the reactions that it can get from some people. Like, some couples are like, oh yeah, I totally do that for you, it would be the most beautiful thing to carry your child. And then other people I know are like, if I'm going through the pain and stress and trauma of childbirth, at least I want to see my genes at the end of it reflected back at me. So, you know, I think it's an interesting dinner party conversation for lesbian couples, and it can cause the odd argument, but I think it's wonderful that you both were. And just while I think of it, you mentioned that one of you would only one of you by Irish law was considered the legal parent. Can you talk to us about who that is? Is it the birth mother?
Yeah, or
is it
so genetic? under Irish law, the person who gives birth is deemed the biological mother of a child. So, you know, obviously that creates all sorts of issues for people who have gone through fertility treatment or surrogacy journeys. Mm. And we had no idea that this was the case. We, you know, we got married when I was 5 months pregnant, and we assumed, along with, I suppose, the majority of the country, that because we now had marriage equality, that kind of equality would extend to the whole family. And we honestly had no idea what lay ahead. When I was, you know, I was due to give birth in August, and we found out that summer, when I gave birth, only I would be on the birth certificate. I would essentially be seen as a single parent, even though I was married, and even though my wife was the other parent, even though it was genetically her child. So many different layers of this, and it was devastating. Like, that was really, really hard to take, because there was nothing we could do about it. And, you know, going to register her birth was one of the saddest days of our lives. Like, I'll never forget how devastated we were that day. Whereas most new parents will tell you that, you know, the registration day is one of the happiest occasions, but for us it was just soul destroying to
did
go
you both
into
go?
Yeah, we did. We both went when it was Ava, and when it came to registering Aria's birth 2 years later, only I went, because it just, at that point, we couldn't believe we were still in this situation. You know, at least when we had Ava, we were kind of like, okay, well, by the time we have our next baby, there's no way this
well,
could
I would,
still be happening.
I would have been thinking, like, maybe if I just go to the registrar, and maybe if I just explain it to the person that's filling in the form, maybe they'll just do me a favour.
Yeah, and, you know, honestly, the registrar, it was an awful situation. She kind of said to the both of us, she said, which one of you is the mother? And we're like, well, we both are. And she's like, no, I mean, which one of you gave birth? And I said, I did. And she said, okay, well, Renee, I'm going to be just directing all my questions at you then. And she didn't even look at Audrey, didn't acknowledge her, didn't even say, do you know what? That's, I know, awful. This is an awful situation, but there's nothing I can do. It was something we will never forget.
So then what did you do post that? Is there a way of having Audrey recognised as a parent, as a guardian? Is there an adoption process? Is there parental rights orders that you could do?
So since then, with regards to adoption, because that's something people always said to us was, would you not just adopt them? I know you shouldn't have to, but couldn't you just do that as an, you know, just something? And the answer to that is, technically you can. There is an amendment to some legislation a few years back. Technically you can do a second parent adoption. However, it's like a catch-22 because the Irish Adoption Authority will not process adoptions where children are born as a result of assisted human reproduction. And the reason they give for this is because they want to wait until there's some solid AHR legislation put in place. So while technically you can do it, they will not process an adoption of a child born as a result of AHR. So that's just kind of a moot point. It's not possible at the moment. With regards to... Yeah, I know. It's just...
I'm scratching my chin and just like looking up to the sky. I'm just like, hang on a minute. Does that apply to any child that goes into the adoption system?
They are only applying it to situations where it's a second parent adoption. So in like in our situation, or even a hetero couple who've done surrogacy and the mother is trying to do a second parent adoption, because under Irish law, a surrogate is considered the mother. With regards to guardianship, you can apply for guardianship. Anyone can apply for guardianship of a child. But in our situation, to do that, you have to be living with a child for 2 years until you're allowed to do that. By the time Audrey was eligible to apply for guardianship for Ava, we had just had a new baby. And well, how can we apply for guardianship for one of them and not the other? Like, you know, so we never went down that road. When all of this was happening for us in the early days of Ava being born, we had heard that there was some legislation that had been passed in 2015, and it was called the Children and Family Relationships Act. And basically it was a piece of legislation that would allow for some same-sex female couples to both be on the birth cert of their child. However, in order to meet the criteria for that, you have to be a female couple, have done fertility treatment in an Irish clinic, have used an identifiable sperm donor, and the child has to be born in Ireland. So if you...
Oh God, poor you, what a nightmare.
We took on a case against the state, and off the back of that, they decided to kind of change their interpretation of that piece of legislation, and they have included reciprocal IVF in the equation. So technically, we should be able to apply for like a retrospective recognition. So we are hopeful that at some point this year we will be able to get a declaration of parentage for Audrey, for our two girls. However, we probably are going to have more kids, and our embryos are not in Ireland, and if we choose to use those embryos and get pregnant, we definitely won't be covered going forwards. So we could be in the situation where Audrey is recognized as a parent to our existing children, but if we have any more, she won't be.
God, I suppose taking from this is like a great comfort in the fact that you obviously believe enough yourselves, of course you do, in your family for this not to have stopped you, for it to have not made you feel like, okay, our family isn't valid by law, therefore we should stop even trying. You're still, you know, you had a second child, and I suppose I'm interested in like how important the legislation is for you on an everyday sense and how you feel as a family.
I would say it's hugely important, and the only reason that we haven't ever stopped and haven't let it stand in the way of us is because we know it's wrong. We know it's wrong that our family isn't considered as valid as any other family, and we've just always known that we would continue fighting until all families are treated the same. And I know that that will happen one day. It's just been a very long road, and I'm sure we still have a lot left to fight for. On an everyday kind of level, it hugely affects us. Like, even just from an emotional point of view, knowing that we've had to fight for something that should just literally be a really basic human right and children's rights issue. We're people who wanted our kids so much, and we fought so hard to have them, and we put so much into them physically, emotionally, financially, everything. And all we want is to be able to care for them. That's all we want. You know, we don't want anything more than what other people just get automatically.
So frustrating. It must be so horrible for Audrey.
Mm. Yeah.
And I mean, all of you, but just particularly sort of I'm feeling towards her because I'm the non-biological parent of my daughter. And so I'm really, my heart's really going out to her and how I would feel in that situation.
It's awful because, and it really creates like an imbalance just even within our own relationship that shouldn't be there, because in every other sense we are such a complete team and we have done everything together for our kids, and yet in the eyes of the law I could just turn around and say, do you know what, I'm going to take the kids and go.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
What a lot that you guys have been through and that you're fighting for on behalf of like so many people in Ireland. I'm sure it's so grateful for all of the work you're putting in, and it must have a real emotional toll as well on you and on your family and just on your mind, like constantly. How do you manage like the campaigning element and just keeping sane and happy and okay in your day-to-day life?
Sometimes I don't manage it. Sometimes I have, like, I'm the sort of person who I kind of thrive on chaos and deadlines, and I have, you know, a million different jobs going at the one time, and for most of the time that's okay and I keep going and going and going, and then sometimes it just gets too much and I just have to throw it all down and say I'm overwhelmed by this. And because it's such a personal thing we're fighting for, yeah, it gets really, really hard sometimes.
Parenting at the best of time, especially during lockdown and this current situation, is pretty hard going. I think to have all that on your shoulders and on your mind, can imagine the stress that adds to the situation.
Yeah, it really does. And it's just, it just gets so frustrating because it's like, how are we still here? You know, there are so many other things that I would like to devote my time to, and so many other causes that I would like to be helping with. And And yet we're still here. We're still fighting for these kind of just basic protections. You know, I would like to be, you know, fighting for other things, like trying to get funding for fertility treatment and, you know, better education within businesses and organizations and schools for LGBTQ plus families. But yet we're still here, still fighting just for like legal recognition.
So in terms of gay male couples who may have gone through surrogacy as their parenting journey, like where do they stand within the law at the moment in terms of parental orders and being able to be recognised as the parents?
So I suppose if we're looking at a pecking order of who has it worst, gay dads through surrogacy have it the worst, and their kids are the least protected of all at the moment in Ireland. You can't do surrogacy here. So anyone who wants to avail of surrogacy either has to go through a country like the US, Canada, the UK, or if someone who has, you know, a friend or family member who will act as their surrogate, obviously, you know, a person can still give birth here. So you could travel with your surrogate to the UK, for example, have an embryo transfer, use donor eggs, you know, do all that in the UK, and then come back to Ireland. Your surrogate would give birth here. But under Irish law, that surrogate would be considered the biological mother, and there's no way to change that. If she's married, it's a good chance that her husband would be considered the father. And you can go to court, and the biological dad can get an order giving him parental rights. But the other father, the non-biological father, has no avenue to become a legal parent. They can apply for guardianship after 2 years. But as I'm sure you know, guardianship is not the same as being recognised as a parent. And it ends when a child turns 18, and it leaves children in a really precarious legal situation, because that's what it's about. Yeah. It's about protecting kids.
But can I just move us away slightly from the campaigning aspect, which there's so much more we could talk about. I'm really interested in just the nature and the dynamics of reciprocal IVF and how that's worked for you. And particularly, I think a lot of our listeners considering it will be interested to know, once the child's born, sort of about bonding and parenting roles and some of that sort of stuff.
That's something I find really interesting. And I think that no matter what way you conceive, and whether you're two women or whatever the kind of family setup is, there is going to be a struggle there with kind of finding your balance as a parenting team. And even if Audrey had been a man, or even if it had been my eggs, I think we would have encountered the same struggles that we did. So, you know, when our first child was born, me as the person who gave birth, and I was breastfeeding, and Ava wanted to be on me all the time and feeding all the time, and I think I had a tendency to try and take over. I definitely had a tendency to try and take over and to think that my way was the right way, and, you know, if things weren't being done the way that I would do them, that maybe, you know, that wasn't okay. And I think Audrey probably felt, I know she did, because we've talked a lot about this, she felt kind of sidelined a bit and didn't quite know what her role was in those early days when, you know, I was the one who, you know, so much focus is on the person who gives birth and obviously making sure they're okay after the birth and everything. But Audrey, I suppose, had to just find her own way to bond with our babies. And she did that, and it wasn't easy. It didn't just come naturally. And I don't think because they were genetically hers that there was this, you know, magical bond there. You know,
that's so interesting, isn't it? Because that's something that a lot of people say is sort of to counter queer parenting, and to say that there is this magic, as you put it brilliantly, a magical kind of genetic bond.
It's just not the case. Like, I think for anyone, when you give birth, or when a new child comes into your life, they're little strangers. You don't know them. Like, I look back on pictures of the early days of our kids, and I'm like, I didn't know who you were. and you didn't know who I was, and we just had to kind of get to know each other.
Yeah.
I know them intimately now, but, you know, when they were
it's
born.
So true, yeah. Did you, Stu, with adopting, did you find that when your kids first came home to be with you, that they gravitated more towards one of you than the other, just out of interest?
Yeah, they've always gravitated more towards John. I think just generally they have. And I think we were prepared for that in all of our training, that there would be a parent that they do just naturally kind of navigate towards. So for 8 months, it was both of us together with them. I think the thing to explain it is that children like to attach themselves to one parent. They can attach themselves to both parents, and they do. But generally, my understanding through the different research, and it's a bit fuzzy because it was a few years ago now, but is that there generally is a stronger attachment between one parent. And that's nothing to do with biological, that's nothing to do with anything, but the fact that there's just something in them, maybe they see that they just are able to attach more to, which I think people should really understand in any situation, because it doesn't always feel great to be that parent that's the one that doesn't feel that they're
God,
not attached
to. I've been there for like 2 years just being like sidelined big time by my daughter. She's only just now sort of come around to me. But funnily enough, the only time, sorry, this is such a digression, but the only time she's ever cried about me leaving the house was over Easter weekend, when I'd been pretending to be the Easter bunny for like 4 hours. And she was like, "Mama, be the Easter bunny." And I would just have to be the Easter bunny and like hop around and do this stupid voice. And she loved me so much as the Easter bunny. And then I had to go out and she was devastated. But it was because I was the Easter bunny and she wanted the Easter bunny to come back. I was like, "Are you kidding me? You prefer the Easter bunny?" Okay.
And I think it changes as well, though. I think, you know, in another couple of years, you may well be the favorite.
Yeah, you know? I'm hanging on to that. I feel like it's going to happen.
It definitely changes. Like, ours has gone back and forth quite a bit. Like, our oldest is... Actually, both of them at the moment are all about Audrey. And I just don't take it personally. I used to, and now I'm like, do you know what?
You can't, can you?
No, you can't. And it does change. And with ours at the moment, they're changing daily, I feel. Like, some days they're just so... into me and it's so lovely, and then some days they just don't want to know. Like today, tried to pick up my youngest son and he just was just not into it on a walk we were doing. He just only wanted his dad, that was it.
Yep.
So it happens. I wanted to ask about your extended family as well, and have you got that support around you, and how they've kind of felt about the whole situation of both of you not being able to be recognized as the legal parents?
I think having kids in a very positive way changed the dynamic with both of our extended families. Audrey's family, she comes from like a big Irish Catholic family. There has never been any question of our kind of legitimacy as a couple or anything. You know, right from the get-go, I was completely taken in and accepted and very much loved and supported. And on my side of the family, it was a little bit different in that I came from a born again Christian upbringing. I was raised to believe that, you know, being gay was akin to being a murderer. So you can imagine when I started dating Audrey at the age of 21, it was like the worst thing in the world. So to get to the point where we actually had kids, there was a huge kind of progression within the relationship, especially between my mom and myself. You know, for the first couple of years, it was very, very difficult. You know, she kept thinking it was a phase, and eventually, you know, we would break up. And I suppose having kids very much solidified the fact that we were not going to be breaking up. We were a family, and now we were having kids. We were even more so a family now. And I think when we had kids, you know, before that happened, we had to just put very clear boundaries in place, because we knew that when we had kids, there was no way we were going to be allowing anyone into our lives that was going to in any way put our kids' parents into question as, were they actually their parents, or are you a real family? And they're going to get enough of that from the world. We just said there's no way we're going to let people who are supposed to love them, you know, trusted people in their lives, who would kind of bring any sort of negativity into their little worlds. So we kind of just put really clear boundaries in place, and we're very clear with my mom that, you know, we very much wanted her to be in our kids' lives, but in order to do that, you know, any personal opinion she had about the legitimacy of our family would have to be 100% kept to herself. I am really happy to say that actually my mom is our number one babysitter and one of their favorite people. And I never thought I would be saying that. But I think kids can bring a lot of healing. You know, there are still a lot of issues there. But in that particular relationship, like, our kids have definitely brought about a lot of healing.
I think especially for anybody who's listening that, you know, that potentially has had those kind of issues with their family and has the idea of creating their own family as a concern. Actually, as you say, it can be a great healer.
Finally, what is the next step with your campaigning, and how can people listening help you?
So we're actually recording this at a perfect time because we have just launched a new petition today. And we need a lot of people power behind it. There is another piece of legislation called the Assisted Human Reproduction Bill, which basically is to legislate for everything else that hasn't been legislated for. So the main one being surrogacy, but also talking about non-clinical methods of becoming pregnant, using known donors, you know, lots of other kind of ways of having your kids. So this bill has been kind of tossed around for the last decade and has gotten nowhere. At the moment, in its current format, it's completely unacceptable what they're trying to legislate for. It's kind of a repeat of the last piece of legislation where they're making it very, very narrow, the criteria. They're talking about not recognizing children who are already born. It would only be for kids going forward. So it's just completely unacceptable. So basically, we now have this list of recommendations, which includes everything that we're asking for, that has been given to the government. And we have started a petition calling on the government to accept and adopt all of these recommendations into this AHR bill, and then to progress that bill as soon as possible. So we need people to sign that petition. I think we need to get it to at least 20,000 signatures. The last time we had a petition, once it got to 20,000, that seems to be the magic number at which point the politicians have to kind of respond.
Okay, well, everybody listening, please, we'll put a link to the petition in our show notes, and please go and sign it. I will go and do just that now. Well, thank you so much for joining us this evening. It's been brilliant talking to you and hearing a bit about your campaign and also about reciprocal IVF and how it works for your beautiful family.
Thank you so much. Lovely chatting to you both.
Thank you, Renee.
Thank you, Renee, for joining us on Some Families. Wow, Stu, there is still a lot of work to be done, right?
Oh, yes. Quite shocking, actually, the amount of work that still needs to be done. So we are going to put all the links into our show notes. So please go sign them. Go sign the petition and have a look at it. And please share it as well. The work that Renee and everyone in Ireland is doing is fantastic.
Stu, as ever, it's been a pleasure.
You too, Lottie. Before we go, though, I would quite like to hear your Easter Bunny voice.
Oh, no. Oh, my God. Okay. Do you know, she's like a sort of like Cockney, like, okay, what shall I say?
Why don't you give out the Some Families?
Hello. If you like this episode, then email us at somefamilies@storyhunter.co.uk.
I literally maintained that Easter Bunny for the... I'm still having to do it, but I maintained it for about 4 hours on Easter Sunday.
Oh, you sound like you're on helium.
I was like
it.
full method. Easter Bunny.
That is amazing. Thank you for doing that for me right now.
Anything for you, Steve.
So everyone, thank you for listening, and please go find us on social media at Some Families Pod and share us, like us, comment us, and tell your friends and family. Right, for now though, I am off to get a nice big glass of wine.
Me too, and to sign the petition. See you later.
Bye. That is Lottie. Genius.
This episode was produced and edited by Hattie Moyer.
Some Families is a Story Hunter production.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.